Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello friends, it is I, DPC. So, a lot has happened since the last episode of Someone Who Isn't Me that I did with Aaron Weaver of Wolves in the Throne Room. In that time, what's happened? I finally started that goth-tinged post-punk black metal record that's kind of been boiling below the surface for many years. That's actually partly due to the conversation that I had with Aaron. If you haven't listened to that, you can go back and listen to it on all the usual platforms because it was a really good episode, I think. But it was partly due to that, but also due to listening to the episode that Aaron did with Craig on the Downbeat podcast as well, which is also rad. And off the back of that, myself and Craig started working on the Bodies of Change album, which is pretty much in shape now musically and is just kind of waiting on vocals from Greg Pucciato, who's currently out on tour with Jerry Cantrell. So I'm hoping that once he's back, we can get this record finished and released, because I'm pretty stoked on it, to be honest. It's kind of like Wolves in the Throne Room, Agaloc meets Mono, or with a little bit of Deftones, maybe. Anyway, that's happened. I've also been working on a ton of paintings at the moment, including a cover for a really excellent comic book called Department of Truth, which is my favourite comic that I've read in a long time. A very old friend of mine is the artist that draws that and created it with the writer, a guy called Martin Simmons. So that's nice to have been asked to do that. I'm also working on an album cover for a really rad new band made up of very good people from other bands. And aside from creative endeavours, I'm getting ready for festival season and looking forward to travelling outside of the UK for the first time since this plague hit the planet. So that's going to be cool. Anyway, so to the matter at hand, on this episode of Someone Who Isn't Me, episode number 43, my guest is Erik Danielsson, frontman of Swedish black metal titans Watain. If you don't know the band, that is okay. You can rectify that immediately by checking out some of the songs from the upcoming album. There's a couple of tracks, like there's The Howling and Ceramosa, already out there. And the band's about to release their seventh studio album, The Agony and Ecstasy of Watain, which drops at the end of April. And it's an excellent example of where extreme metal is in 2022. As I discuss with Erik on this episode, I'm always drawn to bands that I feel have a clear spiritual component and intention in their works, which is why I like artists like Neurosis and Wolves in the Throne Room, Chelsea Wolf, Om, Wardruna, Horseback, etc., etc. And that's why they resonate so strongly with me, and that's something fundamental to Watain and their approach to music. So over the course of the hour-long conversation, we discuss the upcoming record, but quickly head off on tangents that take in things like recording processes, Gigi Allen, and how transgressive art is somewhat legitimized by the forum in which it's presented. We talk about the nature of the devil as an archetype and an entity, and also the formation of egregores. This is an interesting episode, I think, and I found Erik to be very smart, well-read, and a spiritual person who considers his band to be a spiritual and magical pursuit, which I wholeheartedly back. We'd not really talked before, we'd met once or twice, but any regular listeners of Swim will know that I often get to the mystical nature of the creative process with guests, and if that kind of chat is your jam, then I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Whilst listening back and editing today's episode, there are things I wish I'd brought up or got into a little more, as I found this to be really inspiring and a thought-provoking chat, which is all you can ask for in a conversation such as this, I think. But it is what it is. So I should point out that even though I had Eric record his audio at his end with a mic, just after the 1 hour mark, his recording stopped for some reason, and I had to finish the pod using the audio from the recording of the phone call that I always do as a backup, thanks to the Rodecaster Pro for that. Otherwise, it would have been a very abrupt mid-sentence finish with no real sense of conclusion. So the sound of his recording does change for the last 5 minutes or so, which I hope won't dampen your enjoyment. But to be fair, this is a free podcast, so if it does bother you, then tough shit. Regardless, this is Eric Danielson of Watain. Enjoy. For doing this.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
I'm very excited about it because I really like your band a lot. I mean, I've made that clear in the past, but I think the new album is, yeah, it's great. I think there's something very special about it. So over the course of this, I mean, have you got up to, I won't want to take up any longer than an hour. Is that okay? If we get around that?
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Okay. It's the last thing on my schedule today, so it's totally cool.
Okay, cool. Have you been doing a lot of these then? I guess we're on the cusp of the album coming out at the end of the month, aren't we? So,
yeah, it's been quite a lot lately. But the thing is that I kind of enjoy doing interviews, you know, and I like to do a lot of interviews because they're never the same, really. And even if they are the same, it's pretty cool to talk about Watain. There's a lot to be spoken about, you know, so I don't mind.
Great. You are probably you are a very rare person anyway, but yeah, I think that only clarifies it, because I think most people loathe talking about things, which I get to a certain degree, because I think all great art is an expression of the people making it, and therefore that could be everything that needs to be said. But I'm a terrible person that likes to know, you know,
more.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, fair enough. No, but
I think that's a case of you know, most people within our genre, whichever subgenre anyone wants to classify that as, I think that when you first discover music as a kid, it resonates so profoundly with you. You just want to know everything, don't you? And I still got that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I watch a lot of these shows and read a lot of articles about, like, you know, when there's a new book that I like coming out and there's an interview with the author or on TV or in a magazine, or same thing with, like, when there's a good, like, art exhibition and they are interviewing the artist and so on. I mean, I find that I find that super interesting, and I see it as a kind of, I'm missing the word here, like, it's a continuation of what you're seeing or
yeah,
what you're experiencing, I think, when it works the way it should, you know, those interviews. So
yeah,
and it's also, like, for me personally, I see it as a way to be able to, like, pinpoint things and maybe clarify a few things, you know, that otherwise would just be totally up for interpretation, which a lot of it will still be, I suppose, but it's, I just see it as a kind of a artist benefit to be able to explain myself a little bit every now and then, you know.
Yeah, well, great. Well, hopefully then I'll ask some interesting questions and we'll get into that, because
yeah, sure.
As I was saying, you know, the album's on the cusp of its release. Today's the 13th. It comes out in 16 days, I think. So
right.
So I guess to start, the band was obviously birthed in an underground scene with very clear intentions, and now we find ourselves 25 years later. You're a Grammy-nominated band, you've got gold records, worldwide acclaim, and rightly so, as one of the greatest black metal bands. So if we can talk about as much of that as time will allow, including obviously the new record, but also the esoteric interests and currents that are the core of the band, if we could, depending on how much you would like to talk about that. But I feel that
I think it always comes up in one way or another, you know, those sides of the band. It's like it permeates everything we do.
Yeah.
So it'll be talked about. I'm sure.
Yeah, of course.
If we got an hour. No, but that sounds great. I'm up for anything, man.
Okay, great. So should we talk a little bit about? I don't know where to start. I'm never good at getting into these because when I make notes on it, when I'm listening through to records and doing research. My notes are very much like, you know, when you see in a film when somebody has put together that like a bizarre conspiracy theory with photos on a wall with like threads.
Exactly.
That's unfortunately what my mind is like, and hence my notes are that way as well. And I did try and organize them, but
I can relate.
Okay, let's start with the recording of the record because
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you recorded it live, correct? Which is
exactly
first time you did that.
Yeah, it's the first time we did that, and I don't know why, because it feels like the perfect way to do this kind of music, especially now since we have been writing and composing all the material as a five piece, you know, with a full ensemble in the rehearsal room. It just didn't make any sense really to go in and do it any other way. And we are also, we have the privilege of having our front of house guy as our producer. He's the guy that owns the studio, mm-hmm. Tura. So he knows he knows the way we perform so well, you know, and he knows everyone's ability. He knows like who does what and so on, right? So it was kind of a good setup for being able to also go into the studio, being everyone in the same room and just playing the songs. I mean, basically, technically, it was like a mic'd up rehearsal, but in a church and in a very, very focused manner.
Yeah,
because the studio is actually located in this old church, this countryside. What used to be a countryside church.
Yeah, fantastic. I think the thing is as well, and this is no critique of anyone else. I don't want to get into that, but I feel that, and I'm guilty of it myself. I'm doing it, I'm making a record this way at the moment, but the opportunity now to record, especially in recent times because of what's happened in the last several years, to record remotely is something that we now have as a luxury. We can you know, make records, but I feel like there's something to be missed, especially with a band like yours, because we'll get into that a little later, but I believe that there is something that's very magical about the process of performing.
Absolutely.
And I feel that if you don't record in that way, sometimes it almost seems counterintuitive to not do it that way, because there's more than everybody involved in the outcome. So I feel if you don't give that the chance to breathe literally, then it will be lost. And I think as well, aside from the way that we can record now, is there's obviously a lot of editing going along. And I had this conversation with another artist that I feel that actually they said it best. When you edit now and record it, there's very much a lot of cut and paste going on, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But when something has a vitality to it, moving through it, it's almost like, I guess a snake is a good example. If it were to be a song and you start to cut things up and move it around, it's like all of a sudden the tail is in the middle of the snake and then the head is somewhere at the end.
Yep.
And it loses that vitality somewhat.
Yeah, I got a pretty cool vision in my head, though, when you were talking about this cut up snake with a tail in the middle of it and so on, but yeah, no, exactly. This cutting and pasting and the editing opportunities that exist now are, of course, like, I mean, they are artistic tools like any other artistic tools, I would
say. Sure.
It's easy to get, you know, caught up in this romanticizing of, you know, doing it the old school way and like keeping it analog and so on, right? And I mean, I'm very guilty of that a lot of times, but it's just because it's the way I like to do things, you know. It's just the way that I feel works best, where the result becomes the most potent, I guess. And in the case of like recording live versus recording in the traditional way, I was gonna say, but say the modern way of like tracking every instrument separately, I just feel that, you know, for me, Vatain has always been a band that where I get to do things the way I think I would like all bands to do things. You know what I mean? It's like it's like my Vatain is of course, in essence, like my ideal band, or that's what we've always tried to make it into. It's just like that. And with, you know, if I picture some of my favorite bands recording some of my favorite albums, then I'd much rather picture them being in a really, you know, cool place with a lot of cool shit around them and just playing the songs together. That's kind of how I idealized that situation.
Yeah.
And I have no control over that, how my favorite bands do things, but I do have control over how we do things, and we're just gonna keep on doing that, you know, the way we would like all bands to work, I guess, something along those lines.
Do you think
that I think is, I mean, it's not the reason why we're doing it, but it's definitely one of the reasons.
Yeah. And do you think that there is a palpable, can you feel that more with this record, do you think? I think you can, because, like I said, there's a vitality to it, but.
Right. Well, here's the thing, like, it's, you know, I think, I definitely think it comes across in the final result, but I was also there to experience the process, so you know, but I make a point out of telling how it was recorded live, because I think it might add something to the experience when people listen to it also, you know. I think I would listen to it maybe a little bit differently, and so maybe it's that knowledge of it being recorded live that does that, you know, that adds something to the listening experience. But I don't know. I mean, some people would say that it wouldn't have made a difference at all whether we had, you know, done it this way or just recorded everything separately in a you know, boring hospital kind of environment, and we would still, you'd still hear the same things in the end. I don't believe that. I'm sure others do, but I tend to rely on you know, I don't know, real and urgent things, you know, and this recording session for sure was one of those.
Yeah, I get that, and I kind of liken it to the old kind of psychic TV approach of, you know, the product is the process is the product, and
right,
regardless of how anyone else views that, because all art is subjective, obviously, that's neither here nor there, because it's about what you have as a group have made for yourselves, and everything else is obviously great. That's brilliant that people love it and you get the praise, but yeah, art is for the artist to a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very dangerous for a band to work too much in like sterile environments and to be surrounded with like uninspiring thing, like, you know, if you have the chance to do things in a way that you'll remember them as something, you know, like, fuck, that was a cool recording, or like, fuck, that stage show was something else, you know, why not do it? I mean, it's like you have this one chance, you know, so
yeah,
might as well, right? So I think it's for us it was a great recording session. Really, really, really like atmospheric, and everyone was, you know, really there. Like you could really feel this this total focus from everyone. And at the same time, you know, we were so well rehearsed at that point that you could allow yourself to just let go, which was kind of the goal when we were rehearsing and preparing for entering the studio. We wanted to be as close to the material as we would need to be in order to, you know, play it with our eyes closed, kind of, and just enjoy actually performing the songs rather than, you know, focus on getting it right. So, so that was the level we wanted to be at.
Yeah, and I'm curious, because lyrics are such a hugely important part of what you do, are they finished? Are they a finished thing when you go into track, or are they? Is there like pardon the pun, is there like a skeleton of what the song is about? And I'm just curious. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I think that seems to be so individual from writer to writer, right? How that process works. And I agree, it is pretty interesting, like, because it's such a fundamental part of in building a song, like, or finishing a song, like how so I always feel that once you get the vocals on there and they're the final words, that's when the song is done.
Yeah,
that's kind of my feeling. But I always have, when we're bringing material to the studio, at that point I always have a lyric for each song that is, say, 90% done.
Yeah.
In most cases, 100% done. But I always leave it a little bit open, because there's always this, you know, final twists and turns that the song takes in a studio environment, I suppose.
Yeah.
So it's good to, like, be able to leave a little gap for whatever that wants to make its way into the lyric or into the final version of the song, right? So
yeah.
I like to have titles, and I like to have more or less a finished lyric, so that the rest of the band can read that and, you know, get into, like, the deeper meaning of the song and the real intention of what we're trying to convey, right? So I think that's good, especially if you're going to perform it together. It's good if there is a song about you know, like, fucking fiery power and like fist to the sky kind of mentality, then it's good if everyone knows that and, like, can kind of sing along in their head, you know, with the lyrics. And I think it only benefits the performance.
Of course, yeah, with that intention there, it imprints on everything that everyone does, I think.
Yeah, and it's this, you know, yeah, because it's all, I think it's always good, you know, in the band setting, when you feel that you're performing with the same intention, I guess, or the same thing is in mind, so to say. So it's not like you're performing an instrumental song that no one really knows what it's about.
Yeah,
that can be cool as well, of course. But yeah. But I think we like to, since our songs are so, like, I tend to look at them as quite, like, individual, in the sense that they're like stories in themselves. It's not like the album is a book and there's different chapters in the same story. I tend to look at it more like that they're all short novels, if we're sticking to the book comparison. I think they're all short novels rather than, you know, individual chapters in a book that it's about this one thing, so if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I think it's also good if we all know a little bit about, you know, what's the story here, what are we focusing on here?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that you know, when I was reading through the lyrics, they feel like I guess this is the intention, but they feel like a lot of them are almost like an invocation. You could read them as, you know, I read a lot of books on magic, and yeah, when you can read a set of lyrics and they feel as if they could be something from one of those books, then I assume that is the intention within it, but that might just be me projecting.
I mean, I'm never gonna I'm never gonna deny anyone their interpretation, and it's what I love about releasing music and lyrics to the public, that you know, people have their own interpretations, largely based on their own knowledge and experience, and you know, I don't know what they read and so on, right? And I welcome that to 100%. I think that's what makes the whole thing come alive and kind of like really take root in the world.
Yeah.
So I love that, and that interpretation is definitely has a lot of merit to it. I think that there are definitely invocative aspects of some of these lyrics, definitely.
Yeah.
What I wanted to kind of make sure this time with this album, when I was working on the lyrics, was that they were all I was gonna allow myself to really you know, focus on just one lyric at a time and have that lyric become whatever it wanted, if that makes sense. Like I wasn't that interested in having all the lyrics being about the same things or having the same like intention with what I wanted to communicate with each lyric. It all became quite I guess individual is the word, right? I can't find any better word.
Yeah.
Like separate from one another in that sense. And yeah, some lyrics are definitely written in a more like almost like a trance like mindset, I suppose. It's a little bit hard to pinpoint what goes on in your mind, right, when you're like in a very inspired frame of mind, and it's just everything else is just blocked out, and it's just you and the paper that you're pouring yourself out on. That happens on occasion, and some of those lyrics were written like that, while other lyrics are more, direct. And to take a lyric, like if we to take a concrete example, the lyric for Leper's Grace is almost has like a punk vibe to it, in the sense that it's very directed to, you know, towards certain people and towards certain approaches that people have had towards Vatain and so on. It's like a direct commentary on experience that we've had.
Yeah.
While others are far more, you know, like subversive and abstract and so on. And I like that. I like that dynamics. You know, I think that we don't release albums so often, so it's cool when they can contain, you know, a bit of dynamics and a bit of like, yeah, different layers
I get that. I get that there's an like a form of automatism when you're in the creative process, in the creative space. But I'd love to talk about that in a second, but yeah, going back to Absolutely. Leper's Grace, I feel mm-hmm. yeah, when I saw that, it felt very much like almost like a commentary about the idea of setting yourself apart from a society and walking a path that's freeing, which I guess that is in an esoteric way. That's almost like, you know, the path through, I don't know, for the tarot, for example, from starting as the fool and becoming the hermit and then the magician and then end up at the world, because it's when you set yourself apart and you consider to be following a very specific path, other things open themselves up to you, and I feel that that's when kind of synchronicities and I guess magical experiences happen.
Definitely, and it's something with how the world around you approaches this, you know, and how they look upon that, and I think Leper's Grace deals a lot with, like you say, you know, walking a quite specific path that is not really the common path of men, maybe, and it's my attempt to communicate to communicate kind of my experience with how people have tried to interpret that path from their own perspective, with sometimes quite terrible results. What we're doing with Vatain is of course a form of transgression of the senses. It's always been close to what normal people would call extreme or controversial and so on, right? And I mean that what they see as extreme is and controversial and problematic are things that to others might be beautiful and powerful and invigorating and so on. I mean, George Bataille talked a lot about these things as well, meaning that, you know, it is not until you experience the forbidden pleasures that you can also truly, well, know yourself, but also know your own limitations, and above all, maybe truly know pleasure and passion in their purest form, so to say, and in other people's eyes that might be, you know, super problematic or very like off-putting or repulsive and so on, right? And that's a bit what that lyric is about. You know, the leper's grace is like, to me, there is grace in. The leper is of course the outcast, you know, who they shipped away to colonies to kind of die away. They didn't want to have anything to do with them in normal society, so they shipped them away, like, you're not welcome here, fuck off, you know.
Yeah.
But I think there is something very graceful in the leper. I can relate a lot to this kind of exile in a way, and the community that arose on these like leper islands is deeply fascinating, I think, you know, and the cultures they were small and they're not that well documented in history, but they're super super fascinating. So it's a bit about that, but there's so much crammed into that lyric, but I'm very happy with it. It's a bit different from a lot of the lyrics that I've written, in that it is a quite like direct, unmysterious commentary on these things. As they say, you know, sometimes it's good to get shit out of the system.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
That was one of those cases, I suppose.
It actually made me think about who you might consider to be your peers on that path. I saw recently that you posted like a list of artists that had inspired the band at times, like Yamanda Galar and Gigi Allen and
right.
So yeah.
Yeah, that was cool to do.
Yeah,
it was fun to put that together.
And I guess that. And I can see why from all various aspects of the people that you've listed. Obviously, Farida actually is on We Remain on this record as well, and to see her and Saloon listed is great. But Gigi in particular resonated with me, just because I think that I became quite fascinated with him over the last sort of several years and made loads of paintings of him. But
cool.
Yeah,
you have to show me those.
Yeah, I'll show you afterwards. There's something about him, because I feel like he was so transgressive, and a lot of people took that in the wrong way. It was just shock. He was doing it purely for shock reasons, and that, you know, he was never going to be viewed in the same way as someone like Chris Burden or or boys or as a performance artist. He was just like,
no, exactly.
He's just that fucked up guy that shits on himself.
Right. But still he, I mean, they were not far away from each other, like conceptually and
of course. Yeah.
And artistically. So, but it's, I think there's been no one like Gigi in that sense, you know, and he was also very, he romanticized, of course, the idea of the underground a lot, and you know that he saw the potential in like the revolutionary potential in an underground community, for example. You know, he like wanted to, you know, fan the flames of the aggressions and like the really transgressive parts of the underground at that time, but he was all over the place, of course, you know. But at the same time, he's deeply fascinating in the sense that there's often when artists get that when artists are that extreme, they often have like a pretty clear artistic agenda, or they're political, or they're, you know, they have like this pretty defined purpose somehow. But Gigi seemed to just embody like all he just wanted to like embody the enemy, you know, like rock and roll as the enemy of society, rock and roll as the devil, really. You
yeah.
know? He used the devil as a symbol quite a lot, right? And I believe that he did that in a much more correct way than a lot of others that have used the devil in their work as a symbol.
Yeah.
I think that Gigi was closer to it in the sense that, you know, yeah, sure, the devil is it can definitely be your friend, you know. He's definitely the saint of the saint of those who wants to walk another path in life, and it there's definitely an allure and a beauty to the devil, right? But that's not the whole truth. The devil is also a very complicated figure. It's a figure that invites you to ask yourself the most problematic questions of all, you know. It's not an unproblematic figure whatsoever. It's the opposite of
that. I mean as our people, but I guess also there's the added aspect that what most people would consider to be that figure is an amalgamation of millennia and cultures of all, you know, crushed together almost like a folder or a file on a computer, where it's like, okay, that gets put in this folder now because that's this, and it goes against, well, as we were saying, with
right.
Yeah, that's walked a separate path and is transgressive, and yeah, like we say, different cultures interpret different things, but it's like different heads of the Hydra, I guess.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I think that one of the most important roles of the devil in... If we go beyond religion here and talk about the devil as a symbol in society and philosophy and so on. It is a concept that should not only be that shouldn't be that easily approachable. You know, I think the devil serves a very important purpose as a symbol for the forbidden parts of man. Not only the things that are, you know, dark and exciting, but also things that are terrible and horrible, you know. I think there is something to that combination of, you know, how we are all of course attracted to horror movies, and we all like these stories of we come back to this word transgression a lot, but here we go again, you know. We all like that, but should these stories and should these movies occur in real life, most of us would collapse in fear and intimidation. That's where the devil becomes a very interesting concept, because I believe that the devil has both of those sides. It asks the questions that are quite uncomfortable, and they need to be asked, you know. Without anyone asking those questions, we would just walk around like blind sheep, and that's, no one wants to do that, you know.
Yeah, I agree, and you see that throughout history with people that have written about such things, like, I don't know, like Crowley and Kenneth Grant and Spare and like Michael Ford and people like that, and those sort of adversarial forms. But yeah, I also understand what you're saying, that as well as this kind of Luciferian idea of giver of knowledge and bringer of light.
Yeah, exactly. Illumination, also, really. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, but there's also the more horrifying aspect. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because it's a concept made for humans, you know, to relate to, and that's, you know, as soon as humans come into the picture, you need to remember that we have other qualities than being nice and mild and understanding and loving. You know, if there's anything that history tells us, is that's not the whole truth of mankind, you know, rather the opposite. Yeah, that needs to be acknowledged from time to time and dealt with from time to time, I believe. And I think it's in culture and in art, the devil has such he has an immense role to play in that sense. And I am very proud to do his bidding in that sense, you know, as an artist.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I saw on the I can't remember in the video online where it had the Cormac McCarthy quote from Blood Meridian, where he said men's memories are uncertain,
right,
and the past always differs little from the past that was not.
Yeah, yeah. That's such a mindfuck, isn't it?
yeah
I love that quote.
Yeah,
it's taken from this section. I'm pretty sure, I can't remember, I had this quote written down for such a long time, but I'm pretty sure it's from one of my favorite sections, where there's a blind man who is talking for like four pages about what it is like to be blind. But in this like totally, you know, profound McCarthyan kind of monologue that you just like, yeah, you just, when you're done with it, you just like stare into oblivion for an hour, and then you might get back to normal, you know. Just incredible. But that one quote is just, it doesn't summarize the whole section that I'm talking about that well, but it's definitely like just that quote alone, I think it's just brilliant.
Amazing. Yeah, and as you were saying, that you can't ignore the fact that people aren't, you know, there's not two sides to a coin, or and you said in on the liner notes, or I believe it's the liner notes, it's the manifesto that I have for that I assume is coming with the with the records, where it says that.
Well, actually, it isn't coming with the record. We have sent that out to the press, but we're going to publish it online as well. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. With it saying that it's exploring. Yeah, these dualistic themes of agony and ecstasy, obviously from the title and the sacred and profane, and but the one thing that where it says about you eagerly excavating the winding depths of the mind and spirit with a new sense of clarity and determination, and I just wondered what it was that had brought you that new sense of clarity.
I think one thing that definitely plays a role in that is the fact that for the past 15 years or so, we've been touring quite constantly with Watain, and touring constantly is very inspiring and can be very, you know, invigorating and so forth. But it's a nomadic lifestyle, and it doesn't leave that much place for to put it like this, the pandemic was a very welcome thing in that regard for me. I spent a lot of time to finally, you know, wind down a little bit and to get rid of a lot of unnecessary bullshit that I was carrying with me. And dead weight, kind of, you know, and just focused on getting to know who I was now. Because if you're doing something for 15 years, like touring as we have consistently, you don't really, I mean, of course, you evolve and progress. That's inevitable. But there's not really any, there's no real room for proper reflection. I think, or I find at least.
No, I agree. I think most people that have toured a lot would agree with you there.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. You know what I mean. So I think this newfound sense of clarity that we wrote about in that press release comes a lot from the fact that we've been blessed with this time to just evaluate things a bit anew and see where things are at, you know.
Yeah.
I think I hope that many other artists that have been doing things for a while took the chance to do that as well, because I find that I'm in a much more, I'm in a much better place creatively after that. I think it's perhaps most of all because just, you know, getting rid of a lot of shit that don't need to be there anymore. You know, fuck. I mean, you don't want to go around with a you know, really heavy suitcase when you spend your entire life walking ahead, you know.
Yeah.
Like I like the fair light, that's I guess what I'm referring to with this newfound sense of clarity. There was a lot of self getting to know myself again before, you know, really delving into the writing process and especially the lyrics this time.
Yeah, I hear that.
That was great.
Yeah, because I think that, as you said, when you're touring, and it's almost like being on a pirate ship, isn't it? Or quite often, actually, it's more like being a shark following a pirate ship. But you're constantly moving forward, and it's those breaks from tour where a lot of people really suffer, because it's almost like they've stepped outside of this bubble. And I think this enforced period of that for a lot of people has had this effect where they've had a little self-reflection, I guess, is a way of looking at it, and realizing that there is a lot of bullshit that's kind of become attached, and a lot of things that you put up with that you suddenly go, well, I don't need this in my life. This is bullshit, and I'm not going to.
Yeah, because
let's not do that anymore when we go back to it, I guess.
Because they become a bit like corks, you know, blocking these like holes from where you know eruptions should occur, but they're blocked by this, you know, unnecessary, emotional or spiritual corks, kind of that should just be removed, and then great things can happen, I think. So I think that the album is very much an eruption of things that have been, you know, underlying for a long time and just waiting to fucking burst out, and that's what it is, you know. That's why there is this sense of I have this relation to the album that it feels a lot like a kind of a climax or a culmination of sorts, you know.
Yeah. There's something that was in the notes where it says that the album is distilled, arranged, performed through. And that's the thing I really wanted to talk about as well, because...
Sorry, say again. I didn't really hear you.
Where you said that the album has been distilled, arranged, and performed through you.
Right.
And I know that you said in... the short documentary, Music, Blood and Spirit, when you said that when you were working on the second act, was it Casus Luciferi that you said it about, where you realized that there was something else present there beside the three of you? And I think this is something that I find really, that I always want to talk about, because most people don't want to talk about it. But I remember having a conversation with Scott Kelly from Neurosis.
Right. Yeah, he should be able to talk about that, I suppose, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he said that when they were writing, there's more than just their voices in the room creating it. And for a lot of people, A, they don't want to talk about that because they feel like they're going to be viewed as being crazy, which is fine, whatever. That goes back to what we were initially talking about walking your own path and being ostracized by people. But you know, they're... And again, I guess this is similar to the Gigi thing and someone like any other performance artist. It's about the environment that happens in. But yeah, what I was going to say was about the idea of, you know, like when Gison and Burroughs are working together and they describe the third mind about this thing that became in existence when they were collaborating. And you could consider that to be like an egregore or something. But
exactly.
Yeah. Go on.
No, but the egregore concept is quite fitting into what we're talking about here, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think that's the established concept that I can relate to the most when I try to, you know, talk about this quiet, intimate subject. but there's something to a group of wild-eyed musicians / shamans who are doing things together and evoking something together, because we have never been that interested in just writing good rock songs, you know. There's always been a spiritual approach to what we do. We want to shake our spirits with our work and shake the spirits of others. And in order to do that, you can't rely just on your own, you know, musical skill and your musical taste and your, you know, artistic output. You need to bring in something else. You need to bring that in, and you need to feed it, and you need to honor it, and you need to approach it with reverence, you know. And that's I think something that we have done with Botain since, like you mentioned, you know, Casus Luciferi days.
Yeah. But would you?
Go ahead.
Sorry, I keep interrupting this because I'm very excited. And I, I apologize, but
no worries.
I was going to say, do you think that is an egregore, or do you think that's an external voice that moves through the participants in the creative process. I suppose it's a composite of both.
I would definitely say it's a composite of both. An egregore, the concept of the egregore, maybe we should clarify that to the people who are listening. It's like the concept of the egregore is the it's like a magical child conceived by the members of a group. It is not a physical thing. It is a spiritual thing. It is a immaterial force that is the result of a communal or a group effort.
Yeah, which is
often with like a magical intent or artistic intent, maybe you could say.
Well, they're the same thing, aren't they? I think personally, for me, I think they're the same thing, and that's where they differ from like a tulpa, I guess, because it's definitely like a group working towards an end or working down a path rather than that the egregore becomes apparent.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, then you can work with this. And I mean, I think sometimes that egregore, I mean, Ramones also had an egregore, but perhaps they were not that aware of it being that, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's the power of the group that kind of becomes a thing on its own, and if you're aware of that, and if you have a magical spiritual approach to your artistic work, then you can work with that. You can have that. You can place that as the centerpiece on an altar. You can work with it, you know, distinctly and clearly. And I think that's to a great extent what we have done with Vatain for many years now. You know, we have approached Vatain as something other than the sum of ourselves, but rather, you know, this thing that has been evoked from our common work.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that's a beautiful way of looking at your own artistic work. I think it's very inspiring, and I think that's also why Vatain has really maintained this sense of I don't know, like escalation, really throughout our entire career. We haven't really, you know, slowed down or got tired or uninspired, but rather we have had this thing that demands feeding and that demands, you know, fucking constant fire. I cannot think of a more noble way to spend my life than to do that, really. You know, I think it's a beautiful thing, and I understand that not everyone can relate to these concepts or the, you know, like the idea of magic in the first place, but in general, what it comes down to, maybe if I should talk about it in ways that all people can relate to, it's like value your own work, consider it sacred, you know, because people are gonna listen to it, they're gonna take it to them, and like you should make sure that it's something that you care deeply for, that you have respect for, that you feel reverence for. I think I find that to be a very inspiring approach to have to my work, and I do love the fact that we have maintained that approach throughout our history.
Yeah, and I think that I think you can hear that within certain artists and their work. You can see that's there, and it's, some people view it as just a realness, or, you know, if they don't want to look at it in any kind of esoteric or magical way, they'll just be like, oh yeah, this band's real, or they mean it, man. But do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
I feel that I don't know. I'm always attracted to those bands that have that. Put it that way. But
to put it the other way, like it's also kind of easy to see when a band maybe doesn't have it.
Yeah.
And when you can compare a band that does to a band that doesn't, it might become a bit more obvious. I'm not gonna make any examples here now, but I think maybe most people that are listening could like gets a band in their head when I tell people to think about the band that's just a band. Their music is on the radio and that's that. Kind of, and there's bands like, let's take an example, Neurosis, great example, I think. There's this almost like tribal feeling to it. There is this sense of like there's a magical shimmer around the band. There's something else.
It's
like
purpose, this, yeah.
Exactly. And I agree. I think such bands are the reason why I think it's interesting to be involved in music in the first place.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. I think those bands are to be cherished. I think. Yeah.
Definitely. But I like all kinds of bands. You know, I wouldn't maybe say that like Destruction from Germany or a band like that, but I love that band. I think they're fucking brilliant. I perhaps wouldn't say that about Iron Maiden either, but I think they're brilliant too. But you know, if we talk about, instead, you know, Throbbing Gristle or Psychic TV or Neurosis or actually like the whole industrial scene of the 80s. Because
artists like Coil were working with actual magical documents, and their intention was to approach it in that manner. And, you know,
art is a great tool for that, I think. Music especially, perhaps, you know.
Yeah, and I think within Coil is a brilliant example in the sense that they were actually approaching it in almost like a Burroughs way of cutting up audio in the same way that he was with text,
right.
But also, you know, they were great students of Spare, so there was a lot
brilliant band.
Yeah. Well, actually, continuing on with this idea a little bit is. I think that then translates into the live performances, because I've spoken to a lot of different artists in all fields. So like Jazz Coleman from Killing Joke, for example. But another one which you would probably never agree with at all, and most people would never see. In a weird way, in a similar thing of what I'm about to talk about, is Wes Borland from Limp Bizkit, which most people are going to...
Okay.
So, and bear with me.
I don't really have a strong opinion, honestly. But yeah, go ahead.
I believe the application of, in Jazz's case, it's often makeup, but it could just as easily be cigar ash or ash from other places that he applies to his face. And I had a conversation with Wes that he's obviously known for having all these different looks for various sort of album cycles or whatever. But he and I got into quite an interesting conversation where I was telling him about seeing this one sort of persona that he had and how I found him quite distasteful. And there was a definite aura about the character, shall we say. And he started saying that he acts in different ways, not consciously, but there are different aspects of him and other things that come out depending on how he's dressed. And I had this conversation with Jazz as well, that the application of makeup so that it's no longer you, however, it's you're then opening yourself up to different things to move through you. And that's, again, talking, I guess, going back to what we were saying earlier about the egregore and the idea of corpse paint, I think, is a huge part of that for bands within the black metal scene.
Right.
But the blood in particular with you is hyper important from my perspective. Again, this might just be me reading too much into it, but I believe it, just as somebody that has seen your band play, there is an undeniable aura and that, you know, partly that is the smell, partly that is the fire. That is, I mean, all these things are very elemental, obviously. But I think once you put blood upon yourself, it's been used in ritual for millennia. So
absolutely,
it brings things through. How do you view those forces? Because I think when you have knowledge and conversation with them, how do you view them within the parameters of Watain? You were saying it's the egregore, I guess, that you've been creating. But do you think that?
I'm getting ahead of you. I think I view them as to put it like this: what you're seeing on the Watain stage is the egregore manifested.
Yes.
In that sense, if we want to stick to this concept of the egregore, which I think we could, it's an interesting way to approach what's going on the stage.
Yeah.
But also, like, the Watain stage is deliberately designed, or the entire performance is designed to, at best, like, induce an ecstatic experience, a religious experience.
Yeah.
Which is both intimidating, but also like invigorating, arousing, yeah. I think that the whole idea of the rock concert is still, I mean, it's still a quite young idea when it comes to like bringing people together for a communal experience. I mean, how long have rock concerts been around? For what, 70 years, yeah. 80 years, something like that.
Hmm.
And it's such an interesting setting with so many ceremonial ingredients.
It's really, at best,
I think everyone can agree that a concert can be like ecstatic, religious, you know.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't really matter if we're talking about, you know, Metallica or fucking Coldplay, or if we're talking about underground bands at a, you know, rock and roll dive bar somewhere.
Hmm.
It has the potential of becoming this overwhelming experience. And I think that has to do with that you are in a situation that is quite rare compared to the rest of most people's lives.
Yeah.
You have loud music, you have a lot of people around you that are focusing on this one thing. They're focusing on the music and they're focusing on what's going on that stage.
Yeah.
It's very close to a sermon, to a church sermon, for example.
Yeah.
In that sense. And to bring Watain into this, you also have fire, and people are not, I mean, sure, people sit by campfires and they light candles at home, but fire is not such an ordinary element to be around, you know, for most people, especially not when it's accompanied by music, mm-hmm. when it's accompanied by, you know, the smell, which is super important here as well, because what we're talking about ultimately is to involve all senses in the rock concert, you know, that's a little bit what we're doing, right? So it's really, it's all building up. It's all building up into this like culmination of sensory experience that I think triggers a lot of very primal sides of our spirits.
Yeah.
To be clear, I believe that human beings are embodied spirits. I believe that we are spirits inside human bodies of flesh and blood.
Mm.
And I believe that the spirit can be triggered and activated and made dominant over the flesh if approached in the right way. And the rock concert and the Watain concert is definitely a place where that can happen, you know.
Yeah.
So with all this being said, all the ingredients that we use are designed to arouse the spirit and to bring the spirit into dominance over the flesh in that moment, you know. And this can happen if you open yourself to the experience. If you approach it with a
with a analytical mind or with a like a so try to be rational about it and just like stand with your arms crossed and look at it, you'll have a different experience, of course. But
yeah,
but if you open yourself, you know, then I think you can have a very strong experience. And the blood and the fire and the loud music and the fanatical way in which we approach our performance all adds up to that.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely an energetic exchange, which I don't think happens anymore. I mean, ritual and ceremony is the core of everybody, I think. And I think that's because of you and I are definitely on a similar page about the idea about being embodied spirits. I think that, yeah, there's not many traditions in modern Western society where people get to experience that.
Not really. The society is not really built up like that anymore. You know, the modern day society doesn't leave much room for these kind of thought patterns at all. And that's a shame. But that's also where rock and roll music comes into the picture, I think, you know, because it can still serve that purpose.
Yeah.
I think with Watain will always have one foot in the rock and roll world and one foot in the spiritual world, and that's also what you will experience when you see us live and when you listen to a record.
And that is the perfect ending. That's great.
Good.
Yeah,
I like perfect endings, right? That was...
Thank you for listening to episode 43 of Someone Who Isn't Me with Eric from Watain. The band's incredible new album, The Agony and Ecstasy of Watain, is out on April 29th on Nuclear Blast Records, and it's a truly raging and magical work for sure. You can find the band online at templeofwatain.com and on Instagram, which is just Watain Official. I can be found on Instagram / Daniel P. Carter. The podcast is / Swim Podcast. On the subject of egregores, if you didn't quite catch what was being discussed, I apologize. I guess Theosophy best describes an egregore as a thought form that's created by a group of people, either intentionally or unintentionally, by will or visualization and obsession, etc. And once sparked into existence, it becomes an autonomous entity with the power to influence others, and that can be accessed and interacted with by various techniques such as meditation and trance, etc. I really like the idea of a band egregore created by the artists involved and honed and sustained by an audience or fan base of the band. And in particular, these things can be palpably felt in any situation where they may arise, but I think concerts and festivals in particular are... Yeah, that's obvious. You can feel it. Now that my initial thoughts on this seem to have been confirmed, I'm very much looking forward to seeing Watain play again. Last time I saw them play in London, I actually went back to give Eric like a totemic drawing that I'd done as a gift. And we shook hands. And as I walked away and got back to where my wife was waiting at merch, she was like, "What is that smell?" And I realized that my hand smelt like death where I'd shaken hands with him, which is nice. The cover painting of this episode of Eric is approximately 12-inch squares painted in oil, acrylic, and premium materia on paper. Yeah, you can have a look at that on Instagram, or it should be... Actually, the cover painting should be there on all pod platforms, I think. As always, please subscribe to the pod, leave a nice 5-star review, write a good review on your preferred platform, as that all pushes things forward through the algorithm, and that's great. The next episode is with another Swedish artist, actually, which is Thomas Hark of the band Meshuggah. And I may even put out a brief chat that I had with Tobias of Ghost as well, as like a sideshow. But that's something that I'd be interested to know, actually. Do you want just full episodes where we really get into it, or should I start releasing some of the interviews that I do for the radio show that are only generally about sort of 25 minutes long, so it's not really a full podcast episode, and it's also a bit more focused on what the band are doing currently, so a little more press. I guess. But there's some good conversations there. I've got stuff with, like I said, with Tobias and Randy from Lamb of God, etc. That are just kind of sat there. And I feel a bit weird about putting them up as proper episodes, but they would work as maybe like a sideshow. And that way I could just do like a more of a sketchy cover as well, rather than having to do a painting. Because that is a pain in the ass, let me tell you. Anyway, until next time, stay safe. Much love. Peace.